Is Joe Burrow back or is he all the way back? The Eagles get rolling, and hey, even Devontae Smith comes along for the ride. Cowboys, CeeDee Lamb, massive performance. But what happened to Tony Pollard? All that and more coming up on the Week 8 Sunday recap. Let's get into it. It's Monday, October 30th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is Scott Pianowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. Yeah, week eight. Oh, God, a lot of injuries. Those that did stay healthy, many did score fantasy points. You know, the usual weirdness that is the NFL.
Oh, the usual weirdness. That is what is promised to us on every single Sunday. And, of course, chaos is what is promised to us every single Sunday. You already mentioned some of it, Scott. And what comes out of chaos? Panic. Scott, you know, we always try to do the right thing here. We try to react very accurately, but also we react in the moment. So, of course, if there's more Zen in-depth analysis that you need comforting on, you people out there, hit up the People's Panic Meter, Fantasy Mailbag, yahoosports.com. We are taking your submissions for the Tuesday podcast. But for this show, Scott, I will say I thought this Sunday provided a ton of memorable moments, a ton of very highlight reel, season-defining type of performances. Frankly, a lot of great games. And of all the games that we watched, Scott, Sunday Night Football, that was one of them. That was one of the games this weekend. Chargers 30, Bears 13. I mean, dude, this game to me felt like we were in garbage time for like 3 months.
Yeah, the Chargers needed a get well spot, and the Bears were happy to provide it. Justin Herbert, I don't think his jersey will need to be laundered. He was very sharp. Chargers didn't have a great night running the ball, but you know, Eckler gets home with a big receiving night. Donald Parham, if you needed to go to a tight end substitute with Everett unavailable, was fine. Keenan Allen was active. Quentin Johnston showed something, 5 for 50 on 6 targets. Maybe that can be a springboard. We often talk about the rookies as slower developing stories. Unfortunately, Josh Palmer got hurt early in this game, which was a little bit of a buzzkill. But
yeah,
if you needed a Charger, pretty much they came through for you. If you needed a Bear, I don't know what to tell you. The running games were, all the running backs were basically irrelevant because nobody could get enough work. And you know, Tyson Bagent may have a long NFL career. I don't think anybody thinks he's really supposed to be a starter, especially this early in his career. And he looked, you know, he doesn't look, he looks poised and everything, but he looked overmatched for this assignment. I think it's clear to say that.
Yeah, I think that Brock Purdy's emergence last year, it was like an accelerant to what is already an obsessive compulsive situation with the football media trying to find like the hidden gem quarterback. There was a lot of talk about Bagent leading into this game, Scott. And look, I don't want to be disrespectful to Bagent. The guy's coming from Division II, Shepherd College. The fact that he's in this moment means he has already beaten the odds. But the moment looked, you know, way too big for him. At one point, Chris Collins was like, you know, they're going to sit down and they're going to show like Justin Fields some of these tapes with Tyson Bagent as like teaching moments. Like, I don't know about all that. If Justin Fields needed to see Tyson Bagent do this in order to become a successful NFL quarterback, he probably was never going to be a successful NFL quarterback. So this is a mere footnote, hopefully, in the Bears season. You know, Bagent, again, shout out to him. It's great stuff. But we'll see what happens with Fields the rest of the way. And that really is the only interesting question around the Bears at this point.
I don't know that anything from Sunday's game provided us a lead on this, but Roschon Johnson, Donta Foreman, at some point we're going to want to play these guys again. Do you have any idea where the puck is headed in the Chicago backfield?
Back to Khalil Herbert, if and when he gets off IR, maybe. I don't know. Foreman is tough because he was so productive, and I think he's just a good, solid running back. I think it was kind of a mistake to make him a healthy scratch to start this year. I think it was a mistake hopefully the Bears have learned from, but I have no idea then if he's in the mix, if Herbert's then in the mix at some point, and they probably still want to get Johnson involved. I mean, we talk about three-way backfields all the time, Scott, and how disastrous they can be. A three-way backfield on this offense is an absolute stay-away situation.
Bingo. You know, we always talk about trades that seldom happen. Deadline's coming Tuesday. If I were a contending club and I could throw a really late pick for Foreman. I'd be interested in doing it. And I don't see why the Bears would have any reason against it because they have good depth at the position. But knowing the way things work out, probably nobody will get traded, and we'll be trying to split this delicious pie up three ways in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, he should be a Raven. He should totally be.
I would love that. Even with Gus Edwards coming off his best game of the year, I think that would make a lot of sense. And I wouldn't hate him on the Dolphins. I wouldn't hate him on the Cowboys. Eventually,
Ooh, Cowboys,
So we'll see what happens. I'm hoping, Matt, the next 48 hours are interesting, but 2 days or so. Instead, I'm probably going to be eating a lot of Halloween candy, and I'm not going to have a lot of trades to sink my teeth into, but we'll see what we get.
We shall see what we get. We got big nights out of Austin Eckler and a pretty productive night for Keenan Allen. I know the average depth of target, the air yards police will be all over that for the Chargers offense, but until Quentin Johnson emerges as a consistent starter, when Josh Palmer's not available, he was highly questionable coming into this game, and then he obviously leaves with an injury, that's going to just be the way this offense goes, and I think that will be okay. All right, let's move on here to Bengals 31, 49ers 17. 49ers start off 5-0. They're now 5-3. So you can tell how the last three games have gone for them. We come back to the Bengals here in just a second, Scott, but I do just quickly want to talk about with the 49ers, am I wrong to not really be like that panicked about this stretch, or am I not really seeing what's going on here?
I thought Purdy, this is going to sound really convenient. I thought Purdy played pretty well, other than the two interceptions kind of decided the game. But yeah, he throws for 365 without Debo Samuel. He was handy as a rusher. And just from a fantasy perspective, anything you needed to play, the 49ers get a lot of juice out of a game where they only scored 17 points, where it was Purdy, McCaffrey lives in the end zone. He scores two more times, and Kittle and Ayuk sail past 100 yards. Done. Great. All the targets went to the three main guys. Part of the problem sometimes when Debo's healthy is that this offense gets a little bit cannibalized because there's only one ball to go around. But I want Debo Samuel on the football field. It's just more interesting to watch his team with him. But I don't see – I know the Niners have a three-game losing streak, and so the talking head Monday will be like, what's wrong with the 49ers? Did we overrate Brock Purdy? Is Kyle Shanahan a front? No, this team's fine. What's wrong with the 49ers is they play in an NFL where 1 week the Chiefs don't show up. 1 week the Eagles lose to the Jets. 1 week the Niners, of course, go to Cleveland. They lose to a team they probably shouldn't have lost to. It's just the way every contender has games where they don't look good. Baltimore had a stretch where they lost to the Colts. They lost a couple of games they probably shouldn't have lost. Buffalo stubs its toe every once in a while. The Lions, who are a contender, played a horrible football game last week against Baltimore. That's the NFL. Everybody has a couple of weeks where things don't go right. Right now, the Niners are up against it. They have some injuries, and they play other teams. The other guys get paid too. And the Bengals, they came into this game at a perfect time, right? I mean, Joe Burrow gets hurt. September's kind of a mess. They survive it. And week seven bye, perfect time. They come back. Jamar Chase does Chase things. This was the best Joe Mixon has looked in a while. I know that T. Higgins didn't get the invitation to wide receiver two breakout night. Devonta Smith scored. Jalen Waddle scored. We're hoping T. Higgins could keep the story going. Even Jahan Dotson went bonkers for crying out loud. But whatever, 5 for 69 on 6 targets. That's a step forward. I'm just excited to see Joe Burrow back to, I don't know if he's 100% yet, but you play this crisp of a game against a good 49ers defense. That means I can trust all the pieces in your offense that I want to trust. So it's just nice to have the arrow pointing upwards on the Bengals right now.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I don't think we can overstate how important this performance was. 8.8 yards per attempt for Joe Burrow. He hadn't been over 7 in any other game this year. He'd been as low as sub-3 in week one. He had been as high as 6.9 in the win over the Arizona Cardinals. 87.5% completion rate, 3 touchdowns. I would say that I'm actually a little more like eyebrow raised at the San Francisco 49ers defense than I am at the offense right now. I think if we're talking about cause for concern or maybe dialing back expectations, it probably will be on that 49ers defense. But overall, I still think it's a very good unit. So this is not just like some ho-hum performance for Joe Burrow. I think it's a pretty critical test for him that he just aced. And 6 carries for 43 yards for Joe Burrow is not nothing either. Like, I think we can now officially put to bed the early season, first half season concerns for Burrow and the Bengals. And I think those were right in the moment. Like, you can't watch those games and not be like, yeah, I'm raising the alarm bells on what I'm seeing out of Joe Burrow. I think that was the right move of the time, but I think that time is now officially going to be marked as like, oh, that was cute. It was the pre-bye week stuff. Now we're back on schedule with the Bengals.
Very well said. You get a horrible schedule run out at Cleveland in poor weather against the Baltimore defense. That's really good. And you really hit the key point with him running proactively today. He wanted no part of that in the first six games of the season. But today, and he actually, the Niners, they sacked him three times. They hit him plenty of times. It wasn't like Burrow wasn't under duress, but he seemed like he was playing with the confidence of a player who feels like he's 100%. He's at, and again, the bye week came at a perfect time for him. So it's wheels up for this offense, and it should be a pretty concentrated tree, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, Chase is Chase. I think Higgins eventually is going to get there. Maybe we downgrade him just a little bit what we thought preseason, but he'll be startable every week. And Joe Mixon will get the majority of the work in a backfield with his nobody pushing him. And Burrow will sprinkle in some proactive running. He's not going to run, you know, RPOs or anything, but he'll probably run in the occasional touchdown. Bottom line is this: we want destination offenses for fantasy. And once again, the Bengals are a destination offense.
And we both think the 49ers are still a destination offense as they head head into their week 9 bye. You're so right, Scott, that the truth is probably somewhere in the middle with the 49ers. Not as good as their 5-0 start, not as bad as their 0-3 skid that they're on right now. Like, some fans hate the whole turnover worthy play or interceptable passes stuff, but you're seeing both sides of the coin there with Purdy at the start of the year and where he's at right now. And I think the middle there is probably, again, more towards the truth of the matter.
So the week 9 bye, does Dalton get a bye week in week 9 too? How do we handle that?
No, we work him extra hard.
Bye weeks for Dalton Dalton, as it should be.
Yeah. I mean, it's good for Dalton to come into the 49ers bye week with a little bit of chaos here. We'll work him extra hard this week to make sure we make up.
You know, so he only roots for good teams. He's like a big Warriors fan. He won all those World Series as a Giants fan, big 49ers fan. You know, just once I want Dalton to root for some lousy teams like the rest of us have to do.
That's why he makes his life miserable with the whole Survivor thing every single week. So there is that. All right. Speaking of good teams, let's talk Eagles 38, Commanders 31. Scott, we had a really fun back and forth game the last time these two teams played this year, and we got another one today, and it was really a wide receiver show, man. I mean, obviously AJ Brown showed up to play, but Jahan Dotson, first big game of the season, 108 yards on 10 targets, 8 catches and a touchdown, and even Devontae Smith got loose for a touchdown. So a couple of the headliners came to play, you know, obviously in this game, but a few of the players that people have been waiting on actually showed up and reminded us, oh yeah, things hadn't been going our way, but we are very good players in Devonta Smith and Jahan Dotson.
One of the big themes of week 8 was the revenge of the number 2 receivers, Jalen Waddle, Jahan Dotson, Devonta Smith, players who we had high expectations for, were getting kind of pushed aside by the alpha targets on their own team. And they all had big games today, and especially with Dotson, to see him get 10 targets, because I think Waddle managers and Smith managers knew better days were ahead. Dotson, not only was he probably not started in a lot of leagues, but his roster tag is right around 50% right now. So there may be people who are throwing out offers for him in a couple of days. Nobody saw Sam Howell against an Eagles defense and pass rush that we certainly respect, getting sacked just once, throwing for almost 400 yards. He throws for 4 touchdowns. As you said, these teams have a history of playing really entertaining football. It was a high-scoring fantasy game where most of the guys got home. Maybe Philadelphia was looking ahead to Dallas a little bit. They have a showdown in week 9. But I've been really critical of Howell with this huge sack problem, saying it's more of a Howell problem than it is the offensive line or the play calling. It's only one game. I mean, on the NFL, it's a zigzag league, and you're never really as good as you look on the good days. You're never really as bad as you look on the bad days. But if Howell can just get the sack problem down to something manageable, then that opens the door to Dotson. It opens the door to maybe Logan Thomas, who maybe people had to play today. He comes through for 6 catches and a touchdown. He's actually pretty good all year. That's what we're looking for here. We know McLaurin's startable. We know Robinson is the lesser running back, probably a running back 3 right now. But Howell has the keys. He's the guy who I blame for the sacks, and today he cleaned that up nicely. On the Philadelphia side, Jalen Hurts, let's hear it for him. After the first game of the season when he didn't score well against New England, I think it was, he's been over 20 every week. Usually there's a rushing component to it. It wasn't today. He had to do it all with his arm. He had almost no rushing yardage. He didn't have a rushing touchdown. But in a year where the top of the quarterback board is the players we thought it would be, but they haven't always been scoring as much as we thought. Before this week, Josh Allen was scoring 6 points fewer a game than he was the previous week. Of course, he blew up on Thursday. Let's give it up for Jalen Hurts that every week you can just write down 23, 25, 22, 27. He's pretty much doing that every week, in part because you can just throw it up to A.J. Brown. If A.J. Brown's open, he's open. If he's covered, he's still kind of open.
Yeah. I mean, A.J. Brown is just having an incredible season. And there are a couple times, too, in this game where Jalen Hurts is hobbling around a little bit, right? Like, I think he's still not 100% healthy. The vaunted tush push had a couple of wrinkles to it in this one. One, Jalen Hurts fumbled, which we, like, never see, right? The play is just so automatic. And then the counterpunch where DeAndre Swift took a handoff out of the tush push formation and ran it into the end zone. So that was pretty cool to see for the Eagles. You know, Devontae Smith got loose for that touchdown, like I mentioned, on a broken coverage. But hey, you're going to break coverages when A.J. Brown's having this type of season, right? Like, eventually the tide is going to turn for these number two receivers, like we've said. I think the lesson, obviously, about it this year is just like they might not be as automatic when the offense is trying to find itself. And that was borne out both for Smith and really for Jahan Dotson. I love your point about, hey, if Sam Howell can just keep upright, like, the box score and the results can look like this for Washington every single week, where Terry McLaurin scores, where Jahan Dotson has a big game. Jamison Crowder has 7 for 95 and a touchdown. But remember, Curtis Samuel was like very questionable coming into this game. So that might be why he played a little bit more over Samuel. But yeah, it can look like this every week for these two teams. They just have to kind of get out of their own way. And maybe for the Eagles, they kind of have to have their quarterback be closer to 100%, which I don't think he has been for quite some time. All right, next game up here, Cowboys 43, Rams 20. Scott, this was a surprising result to me, but I think the clear and obvious takeaway has to be about CeeDee Lamb. What a special game for CeeDee Lamb. Like, he had 14 targets. He caught 12 for 158 and two touchdowns. And honestly, Scott, watching this game almost wire to wire, it felt like more. It felt like he had more than that, but I think it was just the wide gap between him and everyone else. I've been kind of calling out the Cowboys. Like sometimes you take the just throw it to your good player a little too far in the outside, because it's just like they're trying to run an offense here, not just get guys stats. And we are obviously selfish sometimes about stats. I don't think that was the case with this Cowboys offense and CeeDee Lamb. I think it was right to call them out for what was going on. And I think the last two games for Dallas have really borne out that conclusion, that when they build the plane around CeeDee Lamb, when he is the engine of the offense, they can have days like this against a couple of not perfect, but quality opponents in the two LA teams.
Well said. Lamb was living in that 6 to 7 target area for a solid month before the Cowboys hit their bye week. And I'm always looking at what a team's do after the bye week. You have all this extra time to get healthy, to game plan, to self-scout, to figure out what's wrong. And the Cowboys had plenty of wrong with them before their bye week and try to fix it. And I rewatched, not only did I watch this game closely as it was being played, but I rewatched all of the Lamb catches. As you said, 14 targets, 12 receptions, career high in catches. The Rams coverage on several of those receptions was actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. But Lamb and Prescott were that locked in, and there's no way to defend a perfectly thrown and perfectly run route and pass. And that's what you saw today. And Prescott gets off with 4 touchdowns. He goes over 300 yards passing. Jake Ferguson, who's been percolating, as, you know, follow the usage, follow the targets. He didn't have a monster game, but 4 for 47 and a touchdown. If you're playing the second or third secondary or tertiary tight end market, you will take that any week. The one guy, so yeah, Lamb, you know, justified. Finally, they lean into Lamb. You want to see that. He was a first-round pick in the summer. He's justified it. Dak is somebody, not a first-name, first-group quarterback, but somebody who can play probably pretty confidently in that second tier. He's kind of who we thought he was. Ferguson's in the circle of trust. The one guy who's been a little bit disappointing, and he didn't in a game where they controlled it, Tony Pollard, only 12 for 53 on the ground. He only had one catch. I think this is pretty obvious, but I'm going to say it anyway, because I don't think Pollard managers are panicking or just trying to give the guy away. There aren't that many running back right answers anyway. They're probably just frustrated more than anything. And I would point to the fact that there's only been one Dallas game this year that's been, I believe, under 12 points of margin. Every game has been a blowout one way or the other. Dallas has won a lot of games like this. They were up 30 points late in the second quarter. No need to overexpose Pollard that way. And some of the games that got out of hand, you know, they benched some guys prematurely. No need to overexpose Pollard when you're getting the snot kicked out of you by the 49ers or something like that. So eventually they're going to have games that fit into. Now, maybe they don't want Pollard to be a 25-30 touch bell cow, but most teams don't want their running back to be that guy anyway. eventually Dallas will start playing some normal games, as much as they're the, like the crazy team in the NFL and everything with Jerry World and all that stuff. But Pollard's going to, his usage is going to tick up. They know he's a good player. And I would say, and not that, again, I don't think people are being panicky about Pollard, but I would stay the course here. I still think he's easily top six, top seven, top eight running back with the upside to climb to maybe 2 to 4 by the end of the season.
I don't know, buddy. I think people are going to be panicked about Tony Pollard, and I'm already seeing a few emails come in on the people's panic meter about Tony Pollard. I think people will be concerned that in a blowout win like this, he only got 12 carries. That being said, and again, I'm sure we'll talk about this more with Andy on tomorrow's podcast, but sometimes when something's working, you just don't go away from it. Like, I think the Eagles have been that way with AJ Brown. It's like, well, why aren't things happening for Devonta Smith? Why aren't things happening for Devonta Smith? It's like, well, don't broke, or if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? You know, and I think that was a lot of what this game was, where, hey, we've got a guy right now who's just, you know, white hot in CeeDee Lamb. Okay, so we're just going to keep peppering him. I think Tony Pollard's day will come. I do think maybe the farther we get away from that broken freaking leg in the playoffs against 49ers last year, like maybe he will look better and better. But there is just a nagging part of me, Scott, that can't get out of my head. Like his running back coach saying, yeah, we don't want to load him up with touches because they're not going to be effective touches. And that is kind of how it started off this year, at least.
Let's mention one other just outlier thing that's unusual. In three of Dallas's wins, three of the blowout wins, they've scored touchdowns on defense. Now, they have a big play defense, and even though some guys have gotten hurt, they're still going to be a team that can disrupt you on defense. But touchdowns on defense are not to be predicted. They're more fluky than anything else. Or maybe somebody picks off a pass, and rather than running it in, they run it down the 7-yard line, and then Tony Pollard scores a touchdown. So there's those. That's the last thing you want to see when you have running back exposure to somebody, and they're winning, and they're controlling the game, and you're getting the game script you want, and then the defense scores. It's like, okay, now we don't get an offensive possession. Now the other team gets the ball back. They're going to think about throwing it. And our offense, maybe we don't run the stuff we wanted to run an hour and a half ago. It just disrupts the flow of the offense for somebody like Paul. And they can say, okay, you know, take a load off, Tony. We don't need you today. I just think Dallas has had an extremely unlucky run out for Pollard in the first 2 months. Maybe you and Andy have your finger on the panic pulse better than I do. So maybe I've underestimated the panic meter or the panic pulse in the streets. If it's out there, I want you to take advantage, and I want you to basically price or value Pollard as much as you did 2 months ago.
I like that call. I'm curious what you think about the Rams in this game. Obviously, they get blown out. It didn't look like they were playing different sports, okay, than what the Cowboys were doing. I mentioned, obviously, CeeDee Lamb's impact on the game, but Dallas was great on defense, and they were great on special teams in this game, which was a huge difference maker for Dallas and why the score looks so lopsided. And look, Dallas's defense and special teams can take over games like that. That is perfectly possible. But also, Matthew Stafford has a thumb injury in this one. Well, obviously, you might know more about it on Monday than we do here on Sunday night and like the extent of it. We get a Brett Rypien appearance in this game. That's not what you want to see. What's your level of concern about, you know, we've talked about lookout below potential with the Rams previously, and they weren't that team coming into the year. But if Stafford's banged up, if the wheels kind of start to fall off on this team, right? Like, as much as it was nice to get a big game out of Daryl Henderson last week in a kind of an unexpected moment, you don't necessarily want to be given Daryl Henderson 12 carries and Royce Freeman 9 carries, right? I maintain that Freeman looks better than Henderson, but is what it is. So I don't know. Where are you at with the Rams right now?
Obviously, a lot of it is tied to the thumb injury that Stafford suffered. But, you know, even with Puka Nacua being one of the breakout players of the year, and even with Cooper Kupp coming back and kind of a seamless comeback, right? He looks so good right away. And, of course, there's been some quiet games the last couple of weeks. But Stafford hasn't scored more than 16 points in a fantasy game this year. He's getting a sea of 14s and 12s and 14s and 16s, stuff like that. One game with multiple touchdown passes. We know he's never going to run for anything. And he's throwing interceptions just about every week, too. So I think I let some of the Puka hype and justified. And, okay, well, maybe I underestimated Sean McVay. And maybe I didn't see Puka coming, of course, because he's on almost none of my rosters. So that's bad on me. But I think that maybe an offered a deodorant that the Stafford situation wasn't as worrisome as it is. I'm officially worried about Matthew Stafford now.
Yeah, and there have been times where I think his real-life play has really outpaced his fantasy production, but I kind of sort of think we're like normalizing a little bit. And I don't know if it's anything other than just health. So we'll have to keep an eye on the Rams going forward. So, all right, let's move on to the next one here. Seattle Seahawks 24, Cleveland Browns 20. I don't really know what there is to say about the Browns. Like, they just kind of are what they are right now. You wish they had better quarterback play, because I think this roster would be awesome, but they don't. They've got PJ Walker in there throwing two interceptions and, having some moments otherwise. So I don't know if you have a ton more to add about the Browns, but I'm curious what you think about the Seahawks. Two picks for Geno, two touchdowns for Geno. You'd like that to not be even, but man, I continue to think they're just so close. They're so close, the Seahawks, to having like a big eruption game. Obviously, 24 points doesn't get you excited, even if the opponent is really strong in Cleveland. But I don't know. What's your temperature check on the Seahawks offense right now, especially coming out of this one?
My biggest takeaway from this game was that when Seattle got the ball late in the game to try to take the lead, we knew Cleveland was either going to punt or probably give the ball over on awful turnover, which is what they did. They threw an interception. Seattle went right down the field. And I thought to myself, yeah, as much as I've talked nicely, really in glowing terms about this Cleveland defense, and Myles Garrett is very much one of the forerunners for defensive player of the year, there's no defense, I don't think, in the NFL right now who should get you away from starting a player you would start every other week. There's just no, oh my God, I can't deal with that defense. Now, if you don't want to play your fringe guys against the Browns, I get it, or whatever defense is exciting you this week. But there's no defense that's, I thought maybe the Browns could be a defense like, oh my God, I got to run away from this defense. No, that defense does not exist in the NFL. And any Seahawk.
Do you think it ever will again with the way the rules are right now and everything? Because like we're talking about this year, Scott, like, defense is back, right? Like, mm-hmm. There's been some huge defensive performance from these Cleveland Browns. But if you're saying that, like, the Browns are not a defense that gets you away from starting dudes you start every single week, and I pretty much agree with you. Do you think we'll ever see a defense like that ever again?
I think we will, just because the game has so much ebb and flow to it. But the thing that's unavoidable, that you have the elephant in the room, is the NFL is trying to do two things constantly when they set up rules. One is to try to keep people as healthy as they can, which seems almost impossible to do, but they're trying to do that. But they're also constantly putting in rules to make it easier to play offense and make it harder to play defense. And people a lot of times talk about, with some of the personal fouls, they'll call on a defender, they'll say, well, what do you want him to do? Where's the hitting zone on the offensive player? It's like the size of a postage stamp.
Right.
And it's so hard to play defense now, but the NFL has no choice. They have to try to keep the players healthy. They can't have today, of all things, you saw all these quarterbacks get hurt. That's a horrible thing for the NFL. They need these signature players on the field. So although the league is always trying to help offense, eventually some team will get the right confluence of a defensive line and pass rush, and they'll just be monsters. But now, and then that team will probably win a lot of games, and then they'll be unable to keep that roster together. They'll get rated in free agency. That's why defense, you think of the great defenses, right? The 85 Bears, they had a run for a few years. The Buccaneers, when they won their title in the early 2000s, they had a run for a few years. That Ravens team with Ray Lewis, they had a run for a few years. It's usually smarter to build your dynasty around offense and around a quarterback, because if you land on the right quarterback, and it's hard to find that guy, but you land on Peyton Manning, you're set for 12 to 15 years. You land on Tom Brady, you're set for a long time. And Patriots extremely lucky that they found Brady as they did and developed him, and nobody saw that coming. You land on Patrick Mahomes. The Chiefs are relevant for as long as he's upright and playing, although, man, they weren't so relevant today. And a game we'll talk about later. But offense carries over, has more continuity, because it's so much is tied to that one guy. If you get that one guy right and then build around him. Remember how the Colts drafted for Peyton Manning, constantly taking offensive players, constantly taking skill guys. The skill guys I wanted the Patriots to take for Tom Brady. Not that anybody's going to feel sorry for Tom Brady. So I don't think it's a surprise that these defenses come and go, and they have runs, and they're short-lived, because it needs – defense. Also, defense has more variance. Football Outsiders Aaron Schatz have always been talking about this. It's just more bouncy. It's more noise in defense year in, year out. So I still think the Browns probably have the best defense in football. But if you never made a decision based on a radical decision anyway, based on defenses in fantasy, I think you'd be playing it right.
I think that's probably right. And in this one, the only guy that you maybe would have done that with is like Tyler Lockett, because he came in banged up and he catches 8 for 81 and a touchdown, kind of to further your point. I will say Jaxon Smith-Njigba scores the game winning touchdown. Like you mentioned, that was a great drive to end it. Jake Bobo's like going to remain a thing. Like we just have to wrap our minds around that. Like, the guy is a really good football player. I mean, he only has 2 catches for 23 yards, but he did rush in a touchdown too. The guy's just going to play a critical role. I do think all of these receivers are going to be a little disappointing in fantasy this year, because unless this offense does start like making good on their red zone kind of bad luck so far, mm-hmm. and like they're all scoring touchdowns, like it's going to be tough week to week for everybody to hit that ceiling. I think Metcalf has been, and this was my point in draft season, like I was in on drafting Metcalf, I was in on drafting Lockett. I did not understand why DK Metcalf was just like going to be immune to JSN's impact on the offense. And now we've got another rookie in Jake Bobo also making an impact here too.
Yeah, shout out to our colleague Kate Majuk, who had DK Metcalf on her fade list. And this is one of those, the glass is half full, half empty things. I mean, DK Metcalf got 14 targets. Great.
Right.
Five catches, 67 yards, and no touchdown. That's not a great fantasy day. That comes in under his projection, not by a lot, but the targets bailed him out. But I thought that was read Kate's piece every week, because a lot of people like do a fade column work. And they just tell you to fade players you don't even want to pick up or start anyway. I mean, she puts out names out there and puts her neck out there, and it's always backed by something interesting. DK Metcalf to me is one of the most frustrating great players. He is great, but it seems like almost every week he loses his mind a little bit, and he picks up like a cheap foul, or he just does something I wish he wouldn't do. I don't know. The rest of the season, I know Metcalf, intuitively, I know he's younger than Lockett. That's never going to change. And he's just got a wider set of skills than Lockett. But I feel like the pace of Lockett is more consistent and I can live with it more. So I'd rather roster Lockett than Metcalf, even if Metcalf's blow-up weeks are going to be bigger than Tyler Lockett's blow-up weeks. As you mentioned, there are ancillary pieces here we have to respect. And JSN at some point will be a great player. Before we get out of here, and we have to talk about this a long time, but interesting that Cleveland used three running backs in this game. Hunt had 15 touches. Yeah. Strong had 11 touches. He had a really long reception early in the game, which may have marked his territory a little bit. And Jerome Ford had 10 touches. Also, PJ Walker did some running slash scrambling, whatever you want to make of that. We talk a lot about the rule of two and three with running backs in fantasy. If you can get a backfield down to two, okay, you know, we can play around with that. Once a backfield gets three wide and maybe the quarterbacks are going to run two, and I don't know when Deshaun Watson's going to play again, but he has a running component as well. Are we officially in the three-headed monster in Cleveland? And if so, how can you play any of these guys with any level of confidence?
Yeah. I mean, obviously a lot of it has to do with how healthy is Jerome Ford? Like how high is his high ankle sprain? Is it a low ankle sprain? Is it a high ankle sprain? Teams seem to have been like very weirdly, I don't know, kind of not honest about like if it's a high ankle sprain, say it's a high ankle sprain, right? Like we don't have to kind of it's a very low high ankle sprain. I don't know. Whatever. But Jerome Ford seemed like he was coming in with like the lowest high ankle sprain on planet Earth. I'm kind of surprised he played in this game. So I do wonder if that has a lot to do with it. But if Pierre Strong, who they traded for very late in the offseason, shows pretty well during this kind of like mini audition, I think we could be looking at a three-headed monster here, which, as you mentioned, is not ideal. All right, moving on to the next one here. Titans 28, Falcons 23. Couple of quarterback storylines in here. Let's start with the positive one. Well, I could argue maybe both of them are positive, if you're a fan of ODU's finest. But Will Levis, in his first start as a rookie, throws four touchdowns. Ryan Tannehill, Titans starting quarterback, had thrown two touchdowns all season. So Will Levis doubles him up in his first one. And man, I'll tell you what, Scott, if this just game fits really, really well with Will Levis's collegiate profile, right? He stood in the pocket, he had a lot of poise. He ran pro style concepts in Kentucky, so he was ready from the moment he hit the field, and he was pushing that thing downfield. 11.5 air yards per target, according to Next Gen Stats, was the highest of all quarterbacks in week 8.
And how often are we saying, you know, utilize your best targets, utilize your best players? He only threw the ball 6 times to DeAndre Hopkins, but it went 4 for 128 and 3 touchdowns. I know there's at least a couple of people who asked me questions related to Hopkins, and my answer was, well, how can you trust the uncertainty of the Titans quarterback room? There's even talk that they were going to play both of their quarterbacks, which sounds crazy.
I mean, Malik Willis did get 2 carries for 4 right. yards and 1 fumble.
So that's the end of that. The Willis experiment.
That will be enough.
So,
that will be enough.
Okay, so at least you know where you stand with Hopkins, right? You can mm-hmm. play. And I'm curious to see trade deadlines coming up. Derrick Henry's been the hot name. Does winning this game make Tennessee any less likely to trade Henry? I think it would be a mistake to hold on to Henry. He's not going to be part of your next great team. And Tajay Spears, who didn't play a lot in this game, he still had 3 carries for 27 yards. He's a splash play waiting to happen. I've stashed him wherever I can. He's right around that 50% number in Yahoo. Just if you have, not every league has pickups on Monday and Tuesday, but I just want to be holding on to Spears just in case Henry does get traded. But we really wanted for Levis, I mean, this game hit the high end of his range, the ultimate high end of his range. But could he click with the one person in this passing game we want to play, which is DeAndre Hopkins? I've given up on everybody else here. I've given up on Chig. I've given up on Treylon Burks, who had a couple of targets incomplete in this game. That's fine. Tennessee's offense isn't going to support a lot of people, but it can support a feature back, whether that's Henry or Spears. And it can support, apparently can support DeAndre Hopkins. Now, on the flip side, I don't mean to kick a guy when he's down, but Desmond Ridder was playing so poorly before he got hurt. I have no delusions that Taylor Heinicke is a long-term solution. I know he threw kind of one of those sketchy over the middle balls. Sometimes people call them hospital balls that got Drake London, may have had something to do with Drake London getting hurt in this game. Nobody wants to see that, but Ritter's been so bad that, and now he's hurt. Maybe it gives them an excuse just to kick the tires on Heinicke and see if Heinicke can spark this offense. And let's see what they have coming up here. They have Minnesota and Arizona, which are two teams you should be able to move the ball on and throw the ball against. So maybe we'll see Heinicke. With Atlanta, I feel like this discussion every week is like, okay, we're frustrated with this team. What's going to change? Are they going to do something different with the usage? Are they going to do something different with the packages? Are we going to stop looking at Kyle Pitts, 3 for 35, no touchdown? Obviously, London got hurt in this game. He was fine before he got hurt. But, you know, Kadarius Hodge out of nowhere gets a 75-yard game. I feel like every week we're frustrated by the Falcons. And we're thinking, is Arthur Smith going to change his mind? Is Arthur Smith just going to be a jerk to the media and insist that Drake London doesn't care if he's targeted? When is this story going to change? I just feel like Atlanta is a 17-week headache, and I'll be glad when their season is over. As talented as Robinson is, and he had a great touchdown run today, as talented as Pitts is, as talented as London is, even a guy like Cordarrelle Patterson's a fun player. Tyler Algier's not a bad running back. I don't think we've always agreed on Arthur Smith. I think you've been more willing to cut him slack than I am, but I don't want to come down too hard when his quarterback gets hurt, but I think Arthur Smith's a big part of the problem here.
I think that what I've always said about Arthur Smith is he designs a really good offense, and I like the way he calls plays, but look, I don't want to get a beer with the guy, right? I don't think he's got a pretty tough hang. I think he doesn't need to be as condescending as he is to the media, right? Like you mentioned, and he got himself like when he did the whole thing this week about how it's toxic groupthink, that's why people are down on Desmond Ridder. I get the point that he's trying to make, because if you look at the three games before this, there were some clear signs of improvement from Desmond Ridder. He had stopped taking sacks. He had shown some real, again, signs of improvement, like his ability to move the defense with his eyes and stuff like that. But you also just kind of had to overlook the turnovers. And I wrote this in my Care Don't Care recap. You can't really just like yada yada a guy's turnover problem when he's turning the ball over at the pace and time of games that Desmond Ridder is doing it, because eventually that's going to bite you in the butt. And that's exactly what happened here in this game with Desmond Ridder. He loses another fumble. He takes 5 freaking sacks in the first half, which is just egregious with this offense that gives you easy buttons and easy answers. So Ridder goes into the concussion protocol. He might have cleared the concussion protocol, but Smith said after the game, like, they didn't bench him for performance reasons. But I'm with you, man. Like, this gives them a moment to evaluate and see what they have in Heinicke, just because I think it will – look, Heinicke's not their future, but I don't think Desmond Ridder is their future. So, like, I get what Arthur Smith is trying to do in that moment, but you don't have to be a jackass in the way that you do it. And like act like everyone's an idiot except you, because you can see something that everybody else can't.
And the other problem is this division's going to be open for business all season. Nobody's going to run away from anybody. Atlanta had the 1-game lead into today's play. So you'd like to think they could take – sometimes teams could take a longer view. They have to try to win this division, and maybe even Arthur Smith has to try to keep his job. So, again, I think we're going to be dealing with this mess all season.
Speaking of that NFC South, the Saints got themselves a win here this week. Saints 38, Colts 27. Real quick on the Colts, they're fun offense to watch. Gardner is going to mess them up every now and again. He throws an interception in this one, right? Like, this is going to be some, like, come on, Gardner moments. But they are kind of like a perfect fantasy offense where we know where the ball is going. We know the guys we can play here. You know, Jonathan Taylor takes a step forward. Zach Moss still gets a touchdown. Like, the Colts are a nice, tidy fantasy offense, Scott. And I appreciate them for that. And then on the other side, they give it up. Like, they give it up on the back end, too, because their cornerbacks are very beatable.
They're a fantasy carnival. It's a shame that Anthony Richardson isn't here for it. But
It really is.
God. The only low scoring game they played all year is when they played Tennessee. And we know, you know, Vrabel ball wants to play football like it's 1976 if the game allows it. But every Colts game feels like it races to 50, 55, 60 points. And although Minshew, for some reason, never seems to score that many points, but whatever.
Yeah.
You know, Pittman got involved very early in this game. Josh Downs had seven more catches. We all like him. Both of the running backs got home. I still think Jonathan Taylor is going to eventually. This is close to a 50-50 split for the workload today. It's not going to stay that way. But Zach Moss is saying, hey, I'm not just a contingency guy. Somebody you can actually play. Now, this week there were no buys, but there's some heavy, ugly bye weeks in the streets coming up. So Zach Moss is going to be somebody people have to look at proactively. On the flip side, the Saints are really kind of interesting and weird and strange. Alvin Kamara, who I didn't want to draft, and it's one thing to say, well, he's not making any splash plays and all that, but if he's going to get this kind of usage, I mean, he only averaged a little over 3 yards a carry, but touchdown run, touchdown catch. Today, only 5 targets. I mean, usually he gets off the bus and gets like 12 targets. I mean, he's right now anywhere running back 2, 3, or 4 every week, just whatever you want to do after McCaffrey. Kamara could be 2. So keep doing it. Keep, you know, laughing at everybody who didn't draft him like me. But what do you do with the rest of the offense? I keep waiting for Chris Olave to happen. He's great. 5 for 46 on 9 targets. That doesn't do it. Michael Thomas, 4 for 68 on 7 targets. It's, you know, there's not a lot of touchdown equity there. Shaheed caught all 3 of his targets, 153 yards. He's a really exciting player.
Yeah, he's awesome.
But how many players can Derek Carr really support? Plus Taysom Hill. And I'm thinking maybe just Taysom Hill is just going to get all those touchdowns. I thought Jamal Williams was going to score. Not that I thought Jamal Williams was going to be great. I thought he might be one of those Mr. September guys. He wasn't that at all. He ended up getting hurt in the second week of the season. But is Taysom Hill's tight end eligible in Yahoo? Is Taysom Hill, I'm like a week or two behind this. I mean, at what point do we have to start considering Taysom Hill as somebody we play every week?
I kick myself every week for the one dynasty league that I have him that I don't play him. Every single week I manage to talk myself out of it. It's like, he's not going to, because I know there's going to be one game where he gets 2 touches, you know, and he doesn't score touchdowns. It's going to be crazy. But they've got this package now with Kalen Saunders, an interior defensive lineman that they signed from Kansas City after winning the Super Bowl last year. They have this package now. We're down on the goal line in short yardage. Like, not only do they have Taysom Hill at quarterback, just like the lone guy who's going to get the snap, then they have, you know, friggin' Kalen Saunders as the fullback. This guy's like 320 pounds. Like, they have so much beef back there. It's almost as automatic as the damn tush push, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, so, I mean, it is kind of getting to a point where I know I'm going to finally guess a week wrong with Taysom Hill when I do eventually just, you know, sack up and play him. But God, it's getting to a point where, again, I kick myself every Monday for not doing it.
You have to accept that there's no floor with him. But he, unlike a lot of other tight ends in his ranking class, where you just, it's tight end, it's touchdown or bust. Taysom Hill actually has yardage upside. Taysom Hill might get 80 to 100 overall total yards. I think he threw a pick in this game. Maybe he was wiped out by penalty. Taysom Hill works. And right now, if a play keeps working, a team's going to keep calling it.
Yeah.
I'm going to rank him as a starter, and the next two matchups are really good too. So I'm going to rank him as a proactive starter the next couple of weeks. Is it a little too hot takey to say that you'd rather have Shaheed rest of season than Michael Thomas?
I think I've had it that way for a while, man.
Have you?
I mean, he just brings so much more juice than Michael Thomas, number one. And number two, just, I think he's just like might be a better player at this point. Than Michael Thomas. I mean, Michael Thomas is fine, but he's just going to be a short area possession receiver. And Shaheed is really legitimately a very, very good, exciting player. Just real quick on Chris Olave, like, I think we're going to get into we're going to fall into the trap here where we talk about Olave and say, like, I just don't, like, Derek Carr is not getting it done. Derek Carr is not getting it done. And look, I've been very frustrated with the way Derek Carr has played this year, especially after that Thursday night game. That was one of the more frustrating starts you're going to get out of any quarterback ever, ever. However, like, Chris Olave is leaving plays on the field, like, period. And you saw it in this one, like, he is streaking wide open down the field and like a football literally just hits him in the face, like, and he doesn't make any sort of attempt to catch it. Something is up there. Obviously, he was just arrested this past week. So not like I'm grasping at straws here to say something's up with him, but something's up with Chris Olave. And I don't really know what the deal is there, besides the fact that he is and has been justifiably frustrated with his quarterback, like, even though he's been quitting on routes, his quarterback has been quitting on plays just as early with these check down stuff too.
I have been auto replying to every Olave question. Be patient, be patient. He'll be the guy you expected. And now I have to expect, I have to concede that Derek Carr is a problem. And this usage tree is far wider because Kamara can handle more touches than I expected. Taysom Hill is a bigger multi-fee than I expected. Now they have Jamal Williams back. There's a handful of touches every week. They're going to go to him. Shaheed's becoming a factor. Thomas is still here. I thought, if not narrow, I thought this offense would at least be fairly concentrated so that Chris Olave could just be a target hog and could be the first read all the time. And there's more mouths to feed here than I ever expected.
I think to put a bow on it, I'm with you that I'm probably that I have been replying, be patient. He'll be the guy you expect to be patient. Now I'm probably still saying that, but I'm adding a pretty big, like, in bold, I think he will be the guy at some point, but I don't know, man. It's a weird situation beyond all of the just like on paper stuff. It's just, there's something going on there. So, all right.
Would you rather have Olave or Garrett Wilson?
Like rest of season?
Rest of season.
I still think probably Olave, because like the reward is just so great. I mean, we'll talk about the Jets game here. It's like you got to scratch and claw just to get like to 100 yards with Garrett Wilson. Chris Olave can have like a pretty poor game and still have like 100 yards.
Indulge me one other one. Olave or Devonta Smith?
Devonta Smith. I think I'm going to officially kind of flip that.
I agree on that one too.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the rest of the games here, starting with Ravens 31, Cardinals 24. Cardinals get a late game score there to make this one look a little closer than it was. Jonathan Gannon said after the game that Josh Dobbs is going to start next Sunday versus the Cleveland Browns, so that delays Kyler Murray's return at least another week after he has been activated off IR. But I don't know, Scott, where do you want to take this one?
Baltimore looked about as perfect as you could look on offense against Detroit. And just a reminder that outlier performances have to be seen as what they are, unlikely to repeat. Baltimore plays a team in Arizona. They know they're going to win if they show up and play anything close to a representative game. But Lamar comes in when their expectation, a touchdown bails out Mark Andrews. It's the Gus Edwards show of all people. You know, he gets 19 carries. He punches in 3 short touchdowns. It was the classic playing with your food game. I told a lot of people to play Zay Flowers over other options, and he does nothing really with 7 targets. It's just games like this happen. You know, I appreciate Gannon on the other side giving us a straight answer about what he's doing with so many quarterbacks. So many coaches would say, oh, I got to see practice and I got to talk to doctors and I got to see what they look like. You know, so many coaches will practically not even acknowledge there's a game next Sunday. And the fact that Gannon gave us that answer on Sunday night is wonderful. Trey McBride, you get all the Zach Ertz targets, did more with them than Zach Ertz ever would. 10 for 95 and a touchdown, 14 targets. And this is a guy who is still just rostered on 20% of Yahoo leagues. I put him in my sleeper piece. I think most people who do a sleeper piece probably included him because it was such an obvious take. He steps into the Zach Ertz role, and he's been playing better than Zach Ertz for a few weeks now. But, man, that was exciting to see. You know, even if you have 9.5 yards a catch, maybe I shouldn't throw a parade for him. But the 14 targets, the touchdown on their own version of the Arizona push, that was good. DeMarcado got really good usage. Didn't do a ton with it, but 21 touches from a running back, you're going to take it. Man, I feel like I say the same thing with the Cardinals every week. They play hard. Dobbs is a gamer. He's a baller. He's acquitted himself really nice. They'll always have that blowout win over Dallas, and this is the type of game they play. They cover against Baltimore. They got some garbage time late. McBride gets home. Marquise Brown was okay. DeMarcado was all right. Maybe a slight disappointment, but he didn't kill you. So the fantasy, there's some bits of buoyancy here with this offense. I thought they were going to be the worst team in football. I thought they were going to tank and they wouldn't beat anybody. Now, really, they're not beating anybody except for Dallas. But at least every week, I can look at Arizona and there's something to consider. I thought they were going to be a fantasy wasteland. And as Sal Vitri has been pointing out, when James Conner gets back and he becomes the bell cow and maybe they have better quarterback play, James Conner could be a guy. Just get to the playoffs without James Conner. He may be the guy who takes you home.
That is a really good take. And I just think generally this offense has made me excited to see what Kyler Murray looks like in this offense. And because of all of these guys kind of stepping up on the fringes, right? So I'm interested to see what Murray looks like. Last word on the Ravens. I will say that like Rashad Bateman, nothing about his stat line is going to get you excited here. 2 catches for 34 yards. He has another carry for 18 yards, but that carry is critical. I think the way he's looked just good and authoritative when they've thrown him the ball lately is good. So I'm keeping a small candle lit that Rashad Bateman, maybe he's not a fantasy factor rest of the season, but like, and frankly, I think it would kind of take a lot for him to be like a guy that you're starting every week in fantasy, set it and forget it, but that maybe he can just get his career turned around a little bit. I'm keeping a small candle lit there.
What would it take for Matt Harmon to put that candle out? I mean, he's going to retire and be 3 years out of the NFL, and you're going to be like, you know, I heard Bateman's working out. He's looking good. He's lost 10 pounds. You know, I think he could help a team.
Look, by the end of the year, like if he's still playing a limited snap count and like all he's doing is getting 2 for 34, I'm just saying I think he's looked better the last couple of weeks. There's definitely a scenario though where I officially extinguish the candle by the end of the year. I think that's very possible.
Fair enough.
All right, next game here: Dolphins 34, Patriots 17. If you got a little bit of, let me say that again. If you got a little bit excited by what the Patriots did on offense last week and their upset win over the Bills, this week not as exciting, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, Kendrick Bourne had the early touchdown. He got hurt in this game. They did target DeMario Douglas 7 times. It only went 5 for 25. They also gave him a rushing attempt. Pretty much Miami, they kind of showed up and knew what they were going to win. And even though they had a very wide distribution on their passing tree, at least most of the target, 25 targets went to Hill and Waddle. That's all we're asking for is Waddle managers. We know Hill's the guy. Just let Waddle be the 1A. Or you let him be the very high 2. And today we saw it. The Patriots were kind enough not to cover Waddle on his touchdown, but whatever, it still counts. I'm sad to see Raheem Mostert gets home kind of with that short touchdown, but no catches, no targets, 13 for 46. They did get Jeff Wilson involved a little bit. Achan's going to – why can't it just be Achan? So much easier to say. He's coming back soon, however you want to pronounce it. I'm just – Mostert, you can't – I've said he's a forced hold, and I still feel the same way about that, but – we know the music's going to stop at some point. I'm just afraid that we might be really close to that moment. And I look around and all the other chairs are taken.
Yeah, I think that is very possible. It's making me more excited to see the rookie, though, to see Achan back here. I think they had a pretty good like 1-2 punch when those two guys were going, Mostert and Achan. And I kind of think that they'll get back to that. But otherwise, I obviously feel great about the Dolphins.
Do you have anything nice to say or encouraging to say to Ramondre Stevenson Manders?
No, he's been in the coping corner for a couple of weeks now, and I think he should remain there, even if we had a couple.
Yeah, you get his mail sent there at that point. Right? Yeah, I hear you,
100%. All right, next game up: Broncos 24, Chiefs 9. Big upset here. It's the first time the Chiefs have lost to the Broncos in like forever. I know there's an official stat there, but in like forever is good enough. Look. Patrick Mahomes comes into this game with an illness with the, you know, he had the flu. They also laid it out of the broadcast, Scott, probably the nightmare scenario. If you are a father with, and I'm not a parent, I don't have kids, but I imagine it's probably the stone worst when you're the last guy to get the flu, right? They said, started with the kids, then his wife had it, then he had it, then he's got to go play a football game, right? Cause you know, you probably hadn't been getting a lot of sleep, right? Those games before. Anyways, I'm not sitting here saying that the Broncos, there should be an asterisk, a flu asterisk next to their loss or anything like that. That is not what I'm saying. But just giving a shout out to Patrick Mahomes there for probably having to pull some late nights in the household this week. Regardless, Broncos big win here. Javonte Williams touches the ball 30 times. That's encouraging to see.
Yeah, the game ended up being played in relatively benign weather, but it was snowing earlier in the day and it was really cold. So both teams kind of took that December approach to this game with their usage and their strategy. And certainly Denver, I mean, they didn't let Russell Wilson do much playing with the lead. They gave Williams the 30 touches, as you mentioned. Both of the receivers get the touchdown deodorant. So Judy scores a touchdown. Sutton scores a touchdown. You know, I know Sutton is screaming regression. He's been lucky on his touchdowns vis-a-vis his catches. But then again, the plays that are working, it's kind of like Adam Thielen would catch a lot of short touchdowns. People, if that play works and they keep running it and people can't stop it, I don't know. Maybe Cortland Sutton, his touchdown rate will come down a little bit, but I don't think he's going to all of a sudden stop scoring touchdowns. And Russell Wilson's actually been, I think, better. He became a punchline so early this season, and they lost the Miami game. They allowed 70 points, and people are like, let's get Wilson out of there as soon as we can. How quickly can Jared Stidham come here? Can they politic the NCAA to let Caleb Williams play the rest of the season in Denver? Of course, Caleb Williams would say no thank you, but Wilson's been okay. He's not the Russell Wilson he used to be, and it's too bad because that player was a really fun player, and he's a mid-30s guy now. I get it. But at least he's keeping Sutton fantasy relevant, and they pulled off the upset today. They've been a competitive team. Just they had that one day where everything went wrong and Miami hit all the green lights and they got absolutely trampled. I get it. That stuff happens. on the flip side, unfortunately, anything you needed on the Kansas City side just didn't come through. A rare game without a touchdown from Mahomes. You have Kelce, 6 for 58, nothing. Rice had 4 catches. We'll take it. You know, Pacheco only got 8 carries because they were trailing, chasing the game. This is, we talk about this all the time, and I talked about it earlier in this podcast. It's just one of those, and you mentioned the two streaks. Kansas City had won 16 in a row in this series. Mahomes had never lost a road game in the division until today. This is just one of those games when Kansas City is in the playoffs or maybe even the Super Bowl, we'll laugh and say, oh, remember that day they couldn't do anything right and they lost to the Broncos? This was that day. For the most part, just don't rewatch this game. Just delete it from your memory bank. I don't think there's any Kansas City takeaway. And I guess the Denver takeaway would be, you know, maybe Williams is somebody we can feel pretty good about. McLaughlin only got 6 touches in this game. Samaje Perine hardly plays anymore. He had 3. And I do think Cortland Sutton is a kind of a lower-end wide receiver 2, higher-end wide receiver 3. I know he showed up on sell-high lists and everything, but let's be realistic. Who's banging down your door and needs Cortland Sutton? I have him on some teams, and I'm fine to play him as a wide receiver 3 the rest of the season.
And we might feel very differently about this receiver room a few days from now when the trade deadline comes and goes. All right, next one up here, Vikings 24, Packers 10. Unfortunately, it's tinged with pretty bad vibes coming out of Minnesota. Kirk Cousins probably has an Achilles injury. They're bracing for a season-ending confirmation on the MRI Monday morning.
What do you know about Jaren Hall, Puka Nacua's quarterback at BYU?
I got nothing. I mean, I've seen him play because I watched Puka Nacua and charted him in college, but I don't know, man. makes me just sad, right? Like now I'm like, man, are we not going to get, you know, Justin Jefferson rest of season right now that Kirk Cousins is gone? It makes me concerned. And I feel so bad.
In the middle of this game, when I wasn't sure what I was going to write about, I ended up leading with the Cowboys in my column. I was thinking about writing about Minnesota, about how with Justin Jefferson out, look at Kirk Cousins. He's got Jordan Addison going. He's got TJ Hawkinson going. He's got KJ Osborne had a big game today.
Yeah.
This offense has buoyancy. It's a great offense with Jefferson. It's still a decent offense without Jefferson, but that's all incumbent on Kirk Cousins playing. And you know, now they go to a rookie who was a third day pick, who the kind of player that if you get him to be a career backup, you're happy. I don't see that there's going to, we've talked all season, teams lose their quarterbacks. There's no trade to be made. You can't make up a trade that's going to make sense here. So we have to take everybody down a tier, maybe a couple of tiers. You know, Addison goes from a really exciting wide receiver 2 to wide receiver. And you see a game and who knows, maybe Hall will be much more ready to play than anybody expects. I don't know. You couldn't take anything from the limited amount of time he got today in a game they already had won, but maybe this also encourages Jefferson to stay off the field longer,
right?
Not rush back, because this team has whatever dreams they had. Not that anybody thought they were NFC favorites or anything, but they were thinking, okay, we can still make the playoffs. We had that good win over San Francisco. They were playing well today. I think they felt pretty good about their season. The moment Cousins gets hurt, the balloon is immediately popped, and there's no one popping it. And it's sad to see. Cam Akers did get a touchdown. He and Madison both struggled to find running room, though. I don't think there's any winner here. I'm just afraid this offense might go into a ditch, and it's really sad because Addison was having a great year. Hawkinson was a very bankable tight end. You're in the top 5 somewhere. I know it's kind of boring volume, but whatever. We can set our watch by it. Eventually, Jefferson was going to come back, and now all of that's put on hold, and it's an absolute shame. And what's also an absolute shame is Jordan Love just looks like he's never met his teammates before, never played football. It's so frustrating. This offense has nothing working. I know Dobbs had the touchdown, but whatever. There's nothing you can play on this offense and feel good about. Christian Watson is somebody you just forget benching him. I think in a shallow league, you might even wind up cutting somebody like Christian Watson, and it's not his fault at all.
It's a little bit his fault. It's a little bit his fault.
A little bit his fault. Okay, fair.
I think he was a touch overrated by like the yards per route run gods coming into this year. I think he's a good number 2. Don't think he's a real 1. Some of the catches in this game were like a real number 1 receiver makes some of those plays that he left on the field.
Fair.
There. Some of those three catches on 8 targets. Some of that is on him. I mean, Jordan Love, it's tough because I don't want to be too hard on the guy because these are all, like you said, looks like he's never met his teammates. A lot of his teammates barely played in the NFL, you know? I mean, it's crazy just the lack of veteran presence on this roster. But from a brass tacks perspective, you get 4 for 83 out of Jaden Reed, and you feel like, wow, what a miracle from a fantasy football angle. There's just you're right. There's nothing I trust on this offense right now.
I mean, they just played Vegas, Denver, and Minnesota. There's no great defense there, and they did nothing against any of those teams.
Next one up here, Jacksonville Jaguars 20, Steelers 10. Kenny Pickett leaves with a rib injury coming out of this one. The Jaguars are another kind of like, I don't know if I want to call them a frustrating team, and Travis Etienne was banged up a couple of times in this game. Trevor Lawrence just like mind-numbing interception in the end zone. They always feel like they leave a little bit of meat on the bone, but they end up getting the win. I continue to convince myself, Scott, that there is a better, sexier version of the Jaguars coming at some point this year. When do I have to kind of like let that dream die?
Well, at least the concentration was so tight, right? Only five players were targeted. Calvin Ridley, who I've been very harsh on, 6 for 83 on 10 targets, will take it. Engram catches all 10 of his targets. Etienne handles 27 touches. A quiet game for Kirk. But if your quiet game is 4 for 46, I don't want to hear anybody complaining. Christian Kirk has been a fantasy win. Pittsburgh's just it's just a hard place to play. And every Steeler game feels like a rock fight. It feels like every game they play is a 20-10 or a 13-10 game, like the games they have with the Ravens week in and week out. Jacksonville, you know, how long do you have to wait? They have the bye week. Remember, they played the two games in London, and then they come back here. This is a team where their body clocks, their routines must be so screwed up because they lived in a different country for like 17 days. You know, that's just unusual. Now, then they come back and they play whatever version of the San Francisco 49ers we're going to see in week 10. But then the schedule lightens up after that. We know the AFC South is generally a weaker schedule anyway, and they have good crossover scheduling. So I think it's going to happen for the Jags. And Etienne's been a big winner. You know, Kirk's been a big winner. Lawrence a little bit disappointed, but that will come around. Engram probably, when you hash out the stats, probably ranks where he came in before the season. You won't win anything with Engram, but you won't lose anything with him either. Where do we start with the Steelers, man? I'll tell you what, Matt. This game – halfway through this game, I made a decision. I wasn't watching any more Steelers offense. I just couldn't do it. I missed the Pickens touchdown, which I saw on highlights, but I have not. I can't tell you a thing about their second half because I just didn't have the patience to watch any more Pittsburgh Steeler football in week 8.
Well, you know I hate myself, so I watched a good bit of this game.
why they targeted Deontay Johnson 14 times, just for you. Okay. Of course, you, no touchdown.
Of course. By the way, on that note, he was open for like 6 seconds on a slant route in the end zone. And Kenny Pickett just threw it impossibly late and behind him. I mean, that would have been his first touchdown since January 3rd of 2022. And it should have been. Mm-hmm. And it should have been. That game was so classic Deontay Johnson. I can't even explain it, right? There was a brutal drop where he was wide open. Check. He missed some time with injury. Check. He got 14 targets, just dominated the target share. George Pickens has one catch, his highlight catch. That was his one catch. He has and it's kind of a classic Pickens game too, where it's like he has one catch and you're like, why don't they throw to this guy more? Meanwhile, Deontay Johnson's just wide ass open so often, gets 14 targets, 8 catches, 85 yards. And you're like, all right, that was fine, but I'm left a little blue balled by the Deontay Johnson performance. Classic Deontay game, and frankly, like kind of a classic Pickens game. And of course, the quarterback injury, you got to mention that as well. But yeah, it was a beautifully classic. I mean, just you got to respect the commitment to the bit with the Deontay Johnson performance in this one.
Is there ever going to be a right answer in this Pittsburgh backfield?
No,
I'll accept that.
Just no. All right, let's move on to the take bowl here. Panthers 15, Texans 13. I mean, hey, Frank Reich can finally get a good night's sleep. Shout out to Frank Reich. By the way, they had to work for this one at the end, too. Did you see this where Eddie Pinheiro, I think, made two kicks and then finally had to make another one because there were a couple penalties that they made that had to redo it. It was not easy at the end for the Carolina Panthers, but they do get their first win of the season. And Frank Reich doesn't have to live in a nightmare where CJ Stroud, who they did not draft number one overall, beats him.
Right. Yeah. All the stuff that Frank Reich was saying this week with the what else is he going to say quotes? What's he going to say? Oh, geez, we really should have taken that Stroud kid. I don't know why we traded up to take Bryce Young. Of course, he's going to defend his guy. But after the
bye, even if it's not his guy, by the way, even if he really did in his heart of hearts want CJ Stroud, he can't at this point say, yeah, I didn't want that guy. I mean, give me a break. By the way, let's go try to get a win.
Not when you're in that building. No. When you're out of the building, you might say all those things, but you can't say it when you're in the building. Both these teams are coming off their bye, and I wanted to see, could Young take a step forward? Would Adam Thielen stay relevant? Jonathan Mingo maybe take a step forward. All those things happened. I mean, you have low expectations for this team. You're hoping maybe they score 20 points. Today it was only 15. But you can keep playing Thielen confidently. Mingo may pop his head in during the bye week season. And, you know, young receivers were always looking for their trajectories. The touches in the backfield went to Hubbard, although he did nothing with them. But it's notable that he had 17 opportunities and only five for Sanders. So it's been the Hubbard show, although it didn't go well for him. I really wanted to see how Houston was going to handle their backfield. And I was kind of hoping that Damian Pierce, after the bye, maybe the offensive line would play better and whatever, 12 for 46. It's not like he embarrassed himself out there, but he was never targeted. Singletary got just as much usage in this game. Stroud was due to play a stinker, and he played very poorly today against a team that you shouldn't play poorly against. It's also frustrating when people named Andrew Beck are scoring touchdowns. Although later he lost a fumble. Take that, karma, please. Going out and getting it against the Texans. But Stroud was going to have a poor game. He had it against probably the last team he wanted to have it against, because you want to beat the number one overall quarterback and just kind of mark your territory. But I don't have any strong negative takeaways about Houston, other than if it was going to happen for Damian Pierce, I thought today was the day it would have to show, and he didn't really show anything.
Yeah, man, very disappointing for Damian Pierce. He should have had a touchdown. It was called back. He was just a little bit short. And yeah, as you mentioned, then Beck pops it in. I think he might get nominated for the coping corner this week on the Panic Meter episode. And I kind of think he should have been there already. I feel like Damian Pierce is a pretty good player, Scott. I also feel like he doesn't really fit this offense. And like, maybe it's not the last we've heard of Damian Pierce as an NFL player. But I do kind of think it's the last time I'm considering him as a guy that, like, you should be playing in fantasy without like a better option. If that makes sense. All right. Final game. Jets 13, Giants 10. 23 total points scored in this game, Scott. 24 total punts, 11 for the Jets, 13 for the Giants. So made sense for the last game that we recap here.
Yeah, we could skip this game and nobody would complain or maybe even notice. The Giants were all set to win this game with negative net passing yardage, which sounds like it's impossible to have in a game that we can't blame it on weather or some unusual circumstance. But here's the bottom line. The Jets have two guys who can really play, Hall and Wilson, and they get the workloads that we want them to get. Most of Hall's production today was on a long catch, but whatever, he got the workload we want. When Zach Wilson drops back the pass, as hard as it is to watch it, it's usually a pass to Garrett Wilson. That's fine. The Giants, you can play Saquon Barkley, confidence, because they're running him into the ground, and you can, when Darren Waller's healthy, you can play him. He got hurt early in this game, leaves with one catch for 4 yards, and he's still the dean of their passing game. You hate to see Tyrod Taylor get hurt. Tommy DeVito had to come in, throws for negative 1 yards. Congratulations, Tommy. All you had to do to be the team's passing leader was get past 8 yards, and you couldn't do it. Although DeVito did run in a touchdown. Poor Giants fans, man. To lose to the Jets. And the Jets were trying to hand you this game, then you handed it back to them. I still don't know how the Jets got in position to get that field goal. If Graham Gano makes that late kick, this game is over. But whatever. There's a bunch of – I've stopped looking. It probably was in your care, don't care a long time ago. Like, stop it with the Giants receiver room. I've given up on that. The Jets stared into their two main guys. The Giants, really, it's just Barkley right now. They've stared into him. Okay, fine. Some teams forget – going secondary, tertiary guys. It's all about the one or two guys we can play. These teams have that, and that's really all I have to say.
Looking at this Giants receiving core box score, Scott, it's like, I can't believe this isn't screen capped in the middle of the first quarter. You know, 1 for 4 for Darren Waller, 1 for 4 for Matt Breida, and those guys are the leading receivers.
Well, Matt, I used to cover a lot of high school football. This looks like a high school football game. And even in today, in high school, a lot of teams throw the ball really, really well. But there's some teams that can't throw it. And usually those teams know it and don't.
Scott, this is not the first time you said this about the Giants this year. You said this about them, I think, like a couple of weeks ago on this podcast.
So they should petition to play on Friday night. They should be the Friday Night Lights team.
I think Brian Daboll would take it. I think Brian Daboll would take it. I don't know if that guy's going to lose his mind at some point. I can't believe he hasn't.
Yeah, he lost it last game. They should have beaten the Bills. If they don't lose their mind at the first half, right before the gun and then right before the end of the game, hate to see Taylor get hurt. I just like Tyrod Taylor. I know he's not really a fantasy guy and everything, but and the way his Charger career went was just so strange, where maybe he shouldn't have been playing to begin with, and then he gets hurt of all things by a shot being administered right before a game. And Tyrod Taylor's a good guy. I'm glad he's had a long career, and I'm glad he's had a couple of nice moments this season, but today wasn't a game he'll want to remember, and nor will any fantasy managers.
Hampton VA's finest, Tyrod Taylor, shout out. That was a bummer to see for sure. But hey, the Jets, it's always Aaron Rodgers is looking good in these pregame warmups. It's kind of a reminder of what could have been, but at least Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall are doing the damn thing. So that is more than we could possibly hope for. Scott, hell of a show. What a note to finish it on, with the Giants being relegated to high school football for the second time in a season. All right, that is going to do it for us. Shout out to Scott. Shout out to all of you. Appreciate you for being here. Be sure to tune in on Tuesday, where Andy Behrens and I go through the post week 8 regular season people's panic meter. Reminder, if you're panicked about something, and I know you are, send it into fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. Send in videos. You can send in audio messages. You can just send in a regular old email. We will take anything. You can also find my post on Twitter as well. And of course, we'll do a ranking of the top 5 waiver wire pickups after all this weekend's of action. I know you guys need pickups. Andy's going to be there to help you. Until then, we're out.